This is for the men who never settle. The ones who believe only quitters end a game in a tie. The type of guys who choose the bar with the biggest TVs to overcompensate for theirs at home. This is the Lodge mentality. This is Twin Peaks.
Pack your bags, start the car, and get on the road. It's time to go across the country, 2 minutes at a time, for the biggest stories of the day, where they're happening.
Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
Indianapolis, Indiana.
Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
Cleveland, Ohio.
Boston, Mass.
Miami, Florida.
It's the 2 Minute Drill on the program.
Second half of the program begins right now with the 2 Minute Drill brought to you by our friends at Twin Peaks. It's time to get there for some happy hour. 29-degree man-sized draft beer. No better way to start the evening than with a man-sized 29-degree draft beer. Their handcrafted whiskey cocktails, a great drink menu, plus their made-from-scratch food menu, the best TV setup around. It's the place to go and watch games, meet with buddies for a little happy hour. You name it, it's at Twin Peaks. And if you're not a friend of the Peaks, that's right, Friends of the Peaks, you can sign up for their e-club. Stay up to date on all things Twin Peaks and even score some free stuff. Signing up's very easy. Just visit twinpeaks.com/peaksclub. That is at Twin Peaks. Eats, drinks, scenic views. Let's get things started here in the drill. We begin in Atlanta, Georgia. Chris Domino, 680 The Fan, leads us off. Chris, how are you, buddy?
I'm doing well, my friend. How about you?
I'm doing well. How is Ronald Acuña doing, and what does this mean for the Braves as they currently sit 5 games back in the division?
Yeah, I don't know if you can HIPAA-law yourself, but last night on the K-Rod podcast, interpreted by Alex Rodriguez, he's very concerned about what his foot is, even though the MRI and x-rays as of now are negative, and he thinks it's more than just inflammation, which might have been news to the team when they heard about it last night when they left the field. But he put it out there publicly, so we'll see. I don't know if he got on the plane today to Philadelphia. I was trying to find out. I've not heard yet. I'm not a big fan of day-to-day because that usually means it's not so. At some point, they don't have to say anything today unless they feel the need to. Tomorrow afternoon, we'll have a better idea. He came in on some sort of scooter apparatus. And again, I always get a little bit nervous when a guy foregoes the old-fashioned crutches and goes to the modern medical equipment as opposed to just doing what you and I would have done in 1984, just put towels on under our armpits and try to get around where we had to go.
It's a new world, Chris. I mean, come on.
It sure
is. You can't shun technology, right? You got to embrace it. You got to embrace it, Chris.
Yeah, but do you agree with this? If you go get a motorized scooter, much like Paul Pierce sat in that wheelchair for a second and came back in the game, aren't you setting yourself up for a little bit more of a problem?
Well, yeah, if you're suddenly back, you are. Yes,
yeah,
like Paul
exactly.
Pierce, absolutely,
yeah.
You are at that point.
Yeah.
Does this make them more likely to be buyers or sellers?
Oh, that's a good one. Eddie Rosario started his official rehab down in the minor leagues, and I think everybody thought he was the acquisition, and Mike Soroka is the acquisition, Tyler Matzek's the acquisition, and Kirby Yates is the acquisition. You know, with all due respect, and I said it, I don't want to play the game of who said it first, but I looked at Ben Attendee a while ago, and I said, boy, is he a really good fit in a lot of ways. Relationship between the two clubs, guy whose contract is coming up, sort of makes sense in a lot of ways because they needed outfield defense. Michael Harris II has been a godsend to this team, so maybe that takes that one away. But if Acuña's limping and you're worried about how long it might be and you're not really sure if Eddie Rosario and the laser eye surgery is going to work, you might be. The Spencer Strider thing made it interesting because when they put him into the rotation, he's sort of a novelty, his size, the mustache, how hard he throws, but he's actually got a chance to pitch well. That might be the most important move they make, and even if Soroka comes back, him coming long guy out of the pen, I hate to say it, for a guy who wasn't even supposed to be here, drafted in 2020 and he wasn't a highly touted pick, he might be the most important guy on this team eventually coming up down the road.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see. I think there's going to be a number of teams that have some interest in Andrew Benintendi. So I think that's one that there might be a little competition if that's the direction the Braves decide to go.
Yeah, the price is going to go up, not down, no doubt about it.
Yeah. All right, tell me, what do we think of what the Hawks were able to do at pick number 16? They take A.J. Griffin. Is this a good move or bad move?
Somebody that I know very well at Duke told me, great kid, spot-up shooter, will get better with his handles to create his own. Very well liked, very well respected. That part is fine. I like it. You know, there aren't eight guys in the world that I would guarantee are going to be players in the NBA. And we're talking about the world. It's amazing. It's more people playing the game than ever before, better nutrition, better workouts, playing younger, being coached up. And it, you still can't guarantee that eight guys in the world in any draft are really going to be impact players. I don't know what he's going to be eventually, but I do know the Hawks know that they can't do what they did last year. So whether it's a deal with San Antonio, whether it's getting one of these disgruntled guys who's going to demand a trade, you know, the biggest pipe dream around here, and I don't mean that like as a knock to anybody who wants to say it out loud, is the what if Trae Young could pick up the phone and call Kevin Durant? Now, I don't want Kyrie Irving. I don't want anything to do with Kyrie Irving. But what if Kevin Durant actually saw light at the end of the tunnel and wants to go to a place where they've never won a title? That's the Z. I think everything else, A, B, C, D, and certainly the first half of the alphabet doesn't include him, but they're going to be different next year. And if they're not, they get off to a slow start. I don't think anybody's safe in the front office or on the bench.
Yeah, that's the way it looks like. I mean, they tried the let's just replay it. Didn't work. Now they're going to have to make some noise if they're going to keep the fan base happy, that's for sure. Chris Domino in Atlanta. Great stuff, buddy. We appreciate it. Have a great week.
All right, friend. Appreciate it. Have a good day.
Munch Bishop, WTAM 1100, the big one. Munch, how are you, sir?
Brother, I am superb, and I want to thank you. It's always better to start my Monday getting ready for the Guardians pregame show when I get to join you, man.
Well, we do what we can. We do what we can. Tell me, before we get to the Browns, Guardians, two back in the wild card. What does this mean for their plans as they look towards the trade deadline?
Oh, I love you asking. Right today, the second, they are buyers, and I'm hearing two players that are both pitchers, Zach Davies from the D-backs and Tyler Mayo from the Reds. Now, if I'm the team, because there's been some offense at first base, however, the gloves have been horrible, I make a play for Josh Bell. The Nationals are going nowhere, and Josh Bell can be had. But, yeah, right today, their buyers, you got to remember this too, bro, is that there is a five-game series coming up with the Twins starting tonight. Five games in 4 days, and that's going to mean an awful lot for the squad too.
And they're also just two games back of the Twins as well for the division, so that's very much still in play for the Guardians. Will they make a big move, a major move? Will they spend if it will make the club better?
Well, number one, yes, they will. But number two is, I don't know if you saw the news today, but David Blitzer was named as the minority owner, something John Sherman was for a while, your great owner. And they have a local investor in that group, too, with Matt Colling. Now, my jury is still out on Blitzer because he's also part owner of the New Jersey Devils. And, you know, my least favorite team in the NBA, the Philadelphia 76ers, because they're the biggest underachievers. But, hey, if you're writing checks, that's fine. But, no, they definitely will go for someone. They will be buyers at the same. Now, are they going to go for somebody that's going to make, $25 million? Absolutely not. And I'll tell you what breaks my heart. They were considering the guy that you just mentioned, Andrew Benintendi, a few years back when the Red Sox were dating him, never made a move for him. And, you know, just down the road in Cincinnati, it's always a fun thing when a kid comes back to the area.
Yeah, no doubt. And his name, that's two for two. We've heard his name brought up in Atlanta with our last guest and now in Cleveland with you. So it'll be interesting to see what happens there. Ochai Agbaji going to the Cavaliers. What do Cavs fans think about getting Agbaji?
Oh, bro, I got to tell you something. Ecstatic. I was ecstatic. Shot you a note immediately. Here's the thing. Now, again, I want the kid to be able to play. I watched him. He could play. And, you know, I'm not – am I allowed to say this on your show? You know me in Kansas basketball, okay? They should have two or three more championships, but they got the one this year. That's what counts. But you know what else, man? It means so much to me. Maybe it is because I'm a dad now. But before that even happened, it's like, wait a second. This guy is special. And even texted him something about actually to the team to ask him is, when is he running for office? Because I'll vote for him when he's done with his career. But, and you know, just a remarkable young man. And he can shoot from the outside. And, you know what? Perfect size. I'm going to ask you this. Could they plug him in at the two?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that might be his best spot, to be honest
Ooh,
with you.
Okay.
So, But he can flow, I think, freely between the two and the three and can defend both positions. I don't think he's going to be guarding fours or anything. He's definitely a wing,
right.
And I don't think he's going to run the point. But I think, yes, he can D up either a two or a three.
Well, thank you. I really needed to hear that. What else do you want from me?
All right. tell me, what's the latest on Baker Mayfield?
Brother, you know what? I find this refreshing because I am not happy at all. Actually, none of the media members are happy what they did, but some of them have no choice because they have bills to pay, so they have to, you know, go ahead and report on the team as is. But I do know for a fact that the team reached out to Baker. They expect Watson to be out for at least a year. I have no problem with that. Should be longer if you're asking me. So they reached out to Baker since he is still part of the team and still on the payroll, saying, hey, you know what, we'd be better off with you at QB than Brissett or Josh Dobbs, which is a fact. There's no doubt about that. Well, Baker's people basically told them to go pound salt. You disrespect this guy enough. You played him when he could barely walk out on the field. No, he has no interest in playing for you ever again. An interesting thing, too, is you think some teams that need a quarterback would care about the money. Well, nobody wants to help out Haslam with the contract he got Watson. So they're just going to wait for him to cut Baker because he's not been around. They're not going to carry him if he's not doing anything. And bang, they'll just get him for nothing.
The hearing, I believe, with the NFL and NFLPA is tomorrow. You just said expecting a long suspension. What is the expectation for what it will be?
For me and for folks with the teams, it will be at least a year. It'll be the indefinite. You know, and I got to hit you with something else, too, is that everything that's going on with this Sorin, it's one of the shadiest things I've ever seen. You know, a headline last week from Watson, I didn't assault anyone. Headline last week from Watson, all this is wrong. I'll never settle because I'm right. And here's what I know. He just settled 20 of the cases. And I'm going to say this, and it could be my 2 years in law school, but the bottom line is, if you don't do anything wrong or didn't do anything wrong, then you should maintain your innocence and fight for it. You only have one reputation. So not only has he been a predator and abuser of women, but now he's a liar, too. And that's the guy I want to lead my team.
Munch Bishop in Cleveland, Ohio. Great stuff, buddy. We appreciate it. Have yourself a great week.
Brother, I appreciate you. And Casey, you're lucky to have this guy around. Take care, bro.
It's New York, Philly.
Eitan Shander in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, Fox 29. Eitan, how are you, sir?
I am fantastic. Saran, hope all is well with you as well.
All is good with me. Is all good with the Eagles fans and their fancy new little logo?
No. You know, it's amazing because whatever slogan or analogy or phrase that people turn about don't wake sleeping babies or what have you, the Eagles fan is most passive throughout the calendar year. Right when they changed the branding of, what do you call it, the mark, right, of the logo. So it was kind of like, hey, you know, what are you doing? We didn't need all that. But I will be honest, nobody overreacts like we do, and I say that with a badge of honor. The team got absolutely hammered, as you can imagine, not just from egg accounts on social media, but platforms upon platforms. So it became a running joke where it was just like the doldrums of summer from a content standpoint. And thanks, Jeffrey Lurie and the Philadelphia Eagles for handing that over. But, yeah, long story short, no, I haven't met one person who thought that was a good idea.
By the way, I love you. Calling out the eggheads on Twitter. That's strong. You know, would you get an avatar, for God's sake, so we can, you know, trust you at least a little bit? I hear what you're saying. I don't like the logo either. It looks to me like a bad copy of the Jaguars.
Yeah, which is, again, why would you put yourself in a situation to upset Philadelphia Eagles fans in the first place by changing it to something so horrific? And then you're right, Saran, where the first logo that does jump out that's similar is, of all things, Jacksonville Jaguars. So I don't understand, you know. Joe Banner once said the gold standard here in the league is Philadelphia. Jeffrey Lurie echoed it. Now, apparently, the gold standard for Philadelphia to match is Jacksonville. I know Doug Peterson's down there, but, I mean, my goodness, let the guy win a game before you rip off his logo.
Let's turn to the Phillies. Bryce Harper out indefinitely. Phillies 8 back, 1.5 back in the wild card. Is this making buyers or sellers?
It's a great question. I think calling up Mickey Moniak, having Matt Vierling, having some depth at least young depth that you can look at in center field. It's not enough. Bryce Harper is not going to be out for the rest of the season unless he gets surgery on his elbow. If that's the case, Tommy John, then we know he's out. The Phillies may do that. And I don't know if it's chicken or the egg, but the Phillies may use Bryce Harper's injury as an excuse to shut down the aggression at the deadline. But the reality is, if you're just looking at this from a logical standpoint, Bryce has been playing at an MVP level through the elbow injury. There's no reason right there to shut him down for the rest of the year. The thumb, 4 to 6 weeks, reevaluate, see where he may be. If you can be a buyer and bring in a consistent back-end reliever, if you can be a buyer and bring in a available outfielder, somebody who ideally can play center and right, you're no longer in that big of a hole. And the team will respond, man. The team, I think, will rally that their main guy is out. You see that in sports across the board, the win one for the Gipper thing. So I think the Phillies will be okay. They'll tread water. And they have a good matchup with Atlanta with Acuna out as well.
I just don't know how you can be $200 million in and not be all in, right? Like, not have to keep pushing forward. I would think, you know, non-postseason is not an option, would be my expectation on that one. So. But we'll see how they choose. Yeah, am I wrong?
No, you're not wrong, but the history of this ownership, John Middleton, the history of it is they'll do just enough. And it's a lot of smoke and mirrors or show and just, hey, look, come on, we're doing stuff. And that's the thing, is it's kind of just like, whoa, hold on a second, you're right. You're putting out $200 million. Like, what's going on here? The reality is they should be buyers no matter what. And that's unfortunately the history of this ownership surrender is they've hidden under injury. They've hidden under the premise of the season derailed because one, or maybe Gene Segura is still out. So you're right. Logic would tell you, what are you doing? Go ahead and be buyers. But this particular ownership, this particular team has a history moving away.
All right, tell me, what's the update on James Harden and what his future is going to be? Extension? What do you see happening there?
Yeah, so, I mean, that's the thing is there's just no way James Harden doesn't come back on a short-term deal where he's maxing out what he can get. Because it's clear that nobody right now in the open market is going to bend over backwards to pay him long-term. So Daryl Morey, unfortunately, at the expense of the Sixers, is going to give Harden a 2.5-year show-me deal. That's going to be a lot of money.
Yeah, and a lot of money that better return a dividend. Or you mentioned the Philly fans. They ain't going to be happy. Eitan Shander in Philadelphia. Great stuff, buddy. We appreciate it. Have a great week.
You too, my friend. Anytime.
Where you find Mike Rice, KOA, Rockies play-by-play, right there in Denver, Colorado. Mike, how are you, sir?
Doing great, sir. How are you?
Very good. Have Avalanche fans come down from last night's high?
I don't think so. I think it'll be a while. I mean, man, oh, man, they played really well down the stretch in that game, especially in the third period. But, Seren, they were just the best team all year. And they found a way to be the best team in the series against a really good Tampa team, so they should enjoy this. They've earned it.
Certainly way more often than not, the best team does not win it. They did. Why? Are they that far? If you look at the points based on the regular season standings, they're not that far ahead of everybody else. But you mentioned it. You watch this postseason, they look like they're light years ahead. Is this team really that far ahead of the rest of the pack?
Yeah, I mean, they're certainly better. And, I mean, you go 16-4 in the postseason, 9-1 on the road in the playoffs. That's really good, obviously. But I think a couple elements set them apart. Number one, they can play different ways. They're not just a team that can score and can skate. But when you couple the toughness and the ability to grind it out, the ability to forecheck, the ability to slow other offenses down and play on the back end with that speed and that scoring ability, I think that's where the danger comes in. Then, on top of it, you've got you know, maybe the best player in the NHL right now, and Cale Makar is certainly one of. You got, you know, MacKinnon and Landeskog and Rantanen and sort of the other cast of stars, which, you know, have taken a little bit of a backseat because of what Cale's done. And you have a real steady-handed head coach who, in Jared Bednar, who's not afraid to make tough decisions, not afraid to guide the ship through tough conversations and tough stretches. You have a pretty good mix of everything going right now for the Avs.
Yeah, and they keep it together? I mean, they'll be the favorite coming into the season, but is this one that's built to, you know, to sustain it?
Yeah, I mean, the core, I think, you know, I mean, MacKinnon's not going to go anywhere, although they're going to have to pay him more. Makar's already locked up, and Landeskog just signed his big deal last year. I can't remember when Rantanen is up. He's coming, but I don't know if it's this year. But, you know, the and, you know, young guys like Bo Byram and others on the back end certainly provide some stability there just because they're probably not going to get extra money right now. But they certainly have decisions. I mean, that's the challenge Joe Sakic has. I believe they're going to do what they can to keep the core guys together, and a lot of them are going to be back anyway. You know, the big decision will be like Nazem Kadri, career year, I think 30, 31 years old. What do they do there? You know, and some of the trade pieces they got at the deadline, guys who just simply bought in and came in and said, I want to win, period. Tell me what to do or what I need to do. Show me my role. You know, there'll be decisions. And it's not just the frontline guys. You got to have the depth, with which the Avalanche did. So it'll be fun to see what Joe comes up with.
Christian Brown selected by the Denver Nuggets. Is this the, you know, is this met with, first of all, is it a positive in the eyes of the fans?
I think so. I think there's still some question as to, you know, who Christian Brown is amongst the fan base and what he might be able to do. I mean, I think there's probably more excitement about the possibility of guys like Jamal Murray and Michael Porter Jr. finally being healthy again and being able to contribute, and hopefully over the course of the season. But, you know, I mean, the Nuggets seemingly like Christian Brown, like the skill set, the toughness, the ability and the desire to want to do the dirty work, the things that maybe other guys wouldn't want to do. You know, dive for ball that's loose or, you know, grab that rebound that you have to have in a big situation. I think it'll be interesting to see, you know, how Brown puts himself in the position, hopefully, you know, to earn minutes under Michael Malone. Because Michael Malone will play young players. We saw that with Bones Highland. But the onus is on the young player to earn those minutes, especially when you have a team that believes it can be a contender deep into the playoffs. So, yeah, I mean, I think we would expect Christian Brown to play. How much, how effective, all that remains to be seen.
Yeah, it does, no doubt. But tough kid, gets under the skin of opponents, can shoot.
Yep.
I wouldn't call him a shooter yet, but the stroke, I'm trying to think, is a little bit of a shot put push to it, but good rotation and that, you know, everybody when they get to the league needs to shoot it better. But he's already got a pretty good one and much more athletic than advertised. So I think they got a talent. Now we'll see if they can make it all fit together. And you mentioned the injuries, whether or not everybody can come back healthy. That's going to be a big one for the Nuggets if they can have everybody back. But, you know, if they want to play small ball, which I guess that's my next question, do they like the one in, four out? Is that where it seems like that's where everybody else, certainly where college basketball is going, is that where the Nuggets are going with their offense?
It could be. And you know, the one for the Nuggets being Jokic is a guy that, I mean, if you want to put him down low, he could be that guy. But you could also put a little bit shorter but a tough, you know, four down low, because Jokic is so versatile and the offense tends to run through him anyway with his ability to pass the basketball, see the floor and all the rest. So I think there's options for Michael Malone, and part of it may be, you know, how Calvin Booth, who takes over for the departed Tim Connelly, you know, constructs that roster and what they do with other moves. I mean, they've already traded Jamichael Green, so I'm not sure the Nuggets are done. I think there's plenty of road left in this off season for the Nuggets before we see what this roster is going to be.
Yeah, no, I agree. Mike Rice in Denver, great stuff as always, buddy. We appreciate it. Have yourself a great week.
Hey, thanks, Duran. You too.
All
All right, the good sense, end of the hour answer. On this date in 1986,
yes.
I've used this one before.
Have you? Then let me nail it. Let me knock it out of the park.
Robbie Thompson of the Giants set a major league record. What was it? When you hear the answer, you go, oh, that's right.
On this day in 64?
1986.
Oh, Robbie Thompson. I thought you said...
Bobby Thompson.
Bobby Thompson.
Robbie Thompson.
Robbie Thompson of the Giants, second baseman.
Mm-hmm. Robbie Thompson did something four times, the only player ever to do this four times in a game.
Is it... Well, it's not home run.
Mm-mm.
Get hit by a pitch?
Mm-mm.
Four errors?
Nope. That's a good guess.
It
is something you wouldn't want to happen.
And it's not hit by pitch?
Nope.
And it's not an error?
No.
Attacked four times by fans out of the stands?
It could have been.
Found his... Bread was already molded when he got it home.
Yes, that was it. It was four loaves.
No idea.
He's the only player in Major League history to be caught stealing four times in one game.
Oh, I should have got that.
My first response to that when he told me the answer was, how did he not play for the 2012 Royals?
Yes. or really any incarnation of the Royals here of late.
Yeah.
They don't seem to mind being caught.
No.
Oh, you got to run.
They gave away outs like you just get 1,000 a game.
We used to just say it was like Tebow, just run till you're out. That was what the Royals would just do. They'd just get on the bases and just run till they were out.
Who were the biggest perpetrators of that time?
It was pre Escobar. I don't think he did it for him. He was actually a very good base runner.
Who was that crew of Dufy that were
miscreants?
Emil Brown was absolutely a perpetrator of the run till you're out.
He was not a highly thoughtful person.
On the base paths.
In the clubhouse,
where he did shoot a reporter with a pellet gun and also airmailed many a throw.
A couple weeks ago, we had a caller say, hey, look up, compare the stats between Emil Brown's time as a Royal and Mondesi's time as a Royal. So I put
Emil Brown was far superior.
Well, that's the thing. I put MILF and I believe Thunderlips on it. And both of them, before they even got to his statistics, go, hey, did you know he shot somebody in the clubhouse with a pellet gun? And I go, yes, I remember that fondly. And then they broke down his stats with yes, we concluded. But before they even got to his baseball reference page, both of them separately, without being around one another, came up to me you know that guy you were asking me about shot somebody with a pellet gun? Yes.
Yeah.
Friday night before the game, and I was standing next to Karen Kornacki,
right?
Tony Pena Jr.'s locker. And all of a sudden you hear this click. We've played the clip a lot. Right in the eye. We looked down, and her contact was in two pieces on the carpet.
You probably don't know where it is in the system, do you? You might put in either Emil Brown, Al, who did that, or Karen. Karen shot, something like that.
Yeah.
Karen Kornacki, nicest woman you're ever going to meet, is standing there doing her job.
Emil Brown's locker
and who
was
talking?
Tony Pena Jr.
I didn't know if you were just by TPJ. His thing.
Emil Brown's locker is at the very back in the middle, and TPJ was on the right side about halfway down. So he shot at an angle around a pillar, and pow. And we're like, did that actually just happen?
Yeah, and by the way, literally you hear the pop.
Click, pow.
And then, ow, who did that?
And if we looked around, I was like, what is that? It hit her right in the – she was wearing contacts. And
we can laugh, but think about it. We can laugh about it because Karen ended up being okay.
She'd be fine.
Shot in the eye with a pellet gun.
Yes.
This is a good idea.
Emil Brown was not in the clubhouse after the game that night.
Was that before the game?
It was before the game.
Okay.
Because Tony Pena Jr. had just had a big night, had a couple of triples. You know, remember he had that start that had Danny Klinkscale threatening. He would swim to the Dominican.
People said he was clearly a 300 hitter when he never hit 250 in the minors.
And he had some wheels, and that was about it. And
no, he could defend a little.
I mean, as far as a hitter, he was a decent defensive player. But
now a manager in the Royal system, isn't he?
He is. How about your big game, pow?
Yeah, that. Unfortunately, he will be overshadowed by Danny's. I will swim to the Dominican if he hits 300 in any season. I was like, whoa, 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 let's quantify this. If he goes 1-for-3 and is out for the rest of the year, does that count? And we ended up having to, he goes, listen, if he qualifies, I think he said yes. And he goes, I said, what about if he qualifies for the batting title? He goes, I'll begin in Alaska. He never hit 300. Danny, I would never make that statement, no matter how sure I was. No matter how sure I was. No.
And by the way, Emil Brown led the Royals in the RBIs back-to-back years.
Yeah.
It was two worst years in Royals history.
Emil Brown could hit.
Two ADR RBI seasons.
Let's take a break. We're going to try to talk to J.J. Piccolo, the Royals, making the biggest news of the day as they have traded Carlos Santana to the Mariners. They're calling up Vinny Pascantino. We're hoping to talk to the Royals GM, J.J. Piccolo, next here in the program. The biggest news of the day, the Kansas City Royals making a trade. Carlos Santana sent to the Seattle Mariners. Wyatt Mills, William Fleming coming back to the Kansas City Royals, two minor league pitchers. Although Mills has had time in the big leagues, the Royals also announcing today that they're calling up Vinny Pascantino. He'll take the spot of Carlos Santana on the roster. And we're fortunate enough to have a chance to get a few minutes here with the Royals general manager, J.J. Piccolo, joins us right now. J.J., how are you, sir?
Doing well, Saran. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for the time. We appreciate you fitting in a few minutes for us here. Tell me, let's start with this. How long was this deal in the works?
Well, really throughout the weekend. I mean, we started talking to teams a couple weeks ago just to try to put feelers out on what teams may be looking for and letting them know what we are looking to do. And then over the last 48 to 72 hours, a couple teams, you could tell that the interest was getting a little bit greater. And that the time may come a little sooner rather than later. And, you know, glad that we were able to put it together and took, you know, really throughout the evening last night and then this morning to kind of put the finishing touches on it to really complete the deal. But it came together pretty nicely, and we're happy with our return.
There were certainly a lot of fans and maybe a lot of us in the media that it felt like Carlos Santana was not going to bring anything back, that the Royals were maybe just kidding themselves and thinking a deal could be had. Were you ever questioning whether or not Carlos could get it going the way he has, because he's been red hot here for more than 2 weeks?
Well, that was certainly the hope. He struggled early in the year, but the hope was, given his track record, how he's valued in the league, that he could get hot and play well at a time when teams are really starting to evaluate what needs they have going into the second half of the season. So, and at the same time, you know, Vinny, we felt, still needed some at-bats in AAA. So he was able to get the at-bats that he needed. At the same time, Carlos got hot, and then all of a sudden you have kind of a perfect storm that comes together, and the timing feels right. And then more importantly, we had a willing partner that was anxious to work with us and make something happen. So just on all fronts, I think it was a great situation and great outcome.
Royals GM J.J. Piccolo is with us here in the program. Wyatt Mills and William Fleming, tell me about what it is you feel like you got in return.
Well, we have a great history with Wyatt Mills. We were very interested in him in the draft in 2017. We had him at the stadium for a pre-draft workout. We felt like he was a fast mover, somebody that threw a lot of strikes in college at Gonzaga. His role was defined. He was a reliever. We knew he was going to be a reliever. Unfortunately, Seattle was able to get him before we took him, and he did just that. He moved through their system pretty rapidly, made his debut last year, and got up to 1 point this year as well. So he's a sidearm reliever. He's got a different look. He's got a nice slider, high ground ball rates. Soft contact is in his profile, so he kind of fits nicely when you try to put a bullpen together and complement, you know, certain guys with others. And then with William Fleming, really kind of an interesting young prospect, an 11th rounder last year out of Wake Forest, who has a very interesting fastball profile. He's got a lot of movement to his fastball. He's going to be in the mid mid-90s. He's got a really interesting slider as well from a three-quarter arm slot. He's 6'6". It's not too often that you feel like you get a college pitcher that still has projection, but his slider is going to get better, and he's got a changeup that we feel like we need to work on. But it was really his fastball that had some really interesting characteristics to it that attracted our eye.
Let's go back to Wyatt Mills. You mentioned the sidearm delivery. We've seen Quas have success down low. Is that a new approach for the Royals organization? I mean, you guys, a lot of times it seemed like the big, tall, projectable, you know, like what I think every team would love to have type of guy was your profile in it now. And that's not to say that you were always locked into that. Obviously, Tim Collins, who was part of, at least a pennant winning. Was he on your 15 team, too? I think he was, wasn't he?
Yeah.
14,
yep.
Certainly not your you know, the typical profile of what you'd be looking for. So I'm not trying to say you've always been locked into just one guy. But has that been maybe the game has gone there or you're going there with a little bit, you know, more variety of looks for batters to look at out of that bullpen?
Yeah, I don't think it's new because if you go back to those championship teams, you know, besides Tim Collins, we also had Louis Coleman, who is similar to Wyatt Mills, and that's who he was comp to. So we always had an eye on that. I think what we're understanding, too, you know, the way Mike likes to manage a game, he likes to have guys who can finish off an inning, get a ground ball. So you try to supply the manager with pieces that he can manage the game with. So early in the year it was Colin Snyder and then Jose Quas, and now we've got Wyatt Mills. So, you know, they're complementary pieces. And then, you know, unfortunately we've had some injuries and a guy like Jake Brent, who is a completely different look from the left side. But the more variety you can have in a bullpen, it's harder for a team to game plan against you. So it's nice to have those different look guys.
When you mentioned William Fleming and the fastball, he is more that projectable guy, right? 6'6" and the big fastball. Mm-hmm. You mentioned developing that second pitch. How hard is that to do? And is this, would you gauge a lottery ticket or just more of a project with some polishing to be done?
No, I wouldn't term him a lottery ticket. His slider is a lot that's being taught today is a sweeping slider, one that's got a lot of horizontal movement. He's got that in his profile, and it comes from a different slot, so it's really tough on right-handed hitters. Like a lot of young pitchers, it's a matter of repeating that pitch. I mean, he can land in the middle of the plate right now, or he can be, you know, outside corner and, you know, a strikeout pitch. But as he progresses through the minor leagues, he'll learn to perfect that pitch. It's there right now, but it's really repeating it that's going to be the big thing for him. And the third pitch is the changeup. And, you know, we plan to use him as a starter. He started 14 games in low A. We're going to send him to high A, and he'll join our rotation there. And then whether or not he stays a starter in the long run will really come down to his changeup. You know, and that's a pitch he doesn't use a whole lot that we'll encourage him to use, and that'll help us evaluate where he's going in the long term.
We're talking to J.J. Piccolo here in the program. Vinny Pascantino gets the call. What's the ideal usage for Vinny now that he's in the big leagues?
Yeah, we expect him to play a lot. You know, he's not in the lineup today just more because of the circumstances, the lateness of the deal being completed and having traveled down from Omaha and back in an apartment. And he just walked into the clubhouse here about a half hour ago. So he won't be in the lineup tonight, but we expect him to be in the lineup a lot. It's very similar to when we called MJ Melendez up, and even more so when Salvi came back and we kept MJ up. We need to know that they're in the lineup, and that's going to be the discussion between Mike and I and Dayton, Scott Sharp. But we didn't bring him up with the intention of not playing. So you'll see him quite a bit in the lineup, and I'm sure Mike's going to pick his nights and maybe give him a breather. But Vinny's prepared to play every day.
He's going to wear number 9. I was told that. Views of his jersey have been noticed in his locker, so he's going to wear number 9 for Royals fans that are wondering out there. I know he's been a fan favorite of a lot of Royals fans. Certainly he was a huge favorite up in Omaha, but a fan favorite of a lot of Royals fans been waiting for him, and certainly I would know all Italian-Americans are certainly excited when they get a fellow Italian-American on the ball club. You know, should you expect him to hit the ground running right away? I mean, is he a finished project, or do you expect patience to be necessary and some bumps along the way?
Yeah, I think we have to expect to be patient. There's going to be bumps. I mean, we've seen it with every player who's come through here who's gone on to be a good player. There's going to be bumps. in the road. But what we'll ask Vinny to do is just stay with his approach, what he's done over the course of his college and minor league careers, why he's gotten here. You're not going to abandon things. There's going to be nights you got your hands full. We understand that. But if you can have a productive at-bat in those nights that you do have your hands full, that's a big plus. But the expectation is really that he competes every night, doesn't change his approach. The qualities that he has is that he puts the ball in play. He's going to be challenged in different ways. Guys are going to be able to repeat pitches better at this level than they have in the minor leagues. And how he responds to it is going to be the more of the intriguing thing as we evaluate his transition to the big leagues. But there's going to be bumps. There always is. But that's why we waited as long as we did. It was just to wait for the right time, and the time is now, and there's going to be great opportunity and patience on our part to let him grow into the good major league hitter we believe he'll be.
Last question for you, JJ. 36 days away from the trade deadline, do you get a sense right now that it's going to be active, it's going to be busy? Do you feel like you'll be able to get some more things done?
Well, we're going to work at it. You know, I know there's some players that other teams have interest in on our team. We'll continue to talk about how great their interest is. Like this move, every move you make, you want it to better your club. We don't want to move guys just to move them. There's some guys that I think are a little more obvious than others, but we have to be creative in our thinking, very diligent in who we target. And I think, like we did in this deal, you don't want to just make a trade to make a trade. But we have our eyes on some teams, and some teams have their eyes on us. And, you know, we're anxious and excited about, you know, what's coming next 6 weeks.
You use the term creative. Does that mean you may not just be a seller, that you could be a buyer as well?
Well, I can't tell you that we will or won't, but if you have a chance to get a good player that can help your major league team, then I don't see why we would rule that out. Finding those fits is probably the more challenging thing. And, you know, we'll see as we get into really probably the middle part of July, you know, if there's a match like that. If there is, we'll be excited to explore it.
JJ, thanks so much for giving us some time. I know it's a busy day. Congrats on adding a couple of more young arms, and we'll talk to you on down the road.
Okay, Seren. Thank you.
You bet. JJ Pecola, general manager for the Kansas City Royals, joining us here in the program. Really appreciate his time because it is a busy day.
Yeah.
And a chance to hear his thoughts on not only the deal, came together in a couple of days, really working on it over the weekend, acknowledged that there are a couple of other names. I'm assuming Andrew Benintendi, since we heard his name twice in the drill, yeah, unsolicited. I didn't even ask whether or not.
No, Philadelphia?
No, Atlanta.
Atlanta.
We heard during the drill, Atlanta and Cleveland. Mentioned Andrew Benintendi. David Leske earlier today in the 2 o'clock hour, which you can catch at 810WHB.com on the podcast. He's got the Phillies circled as Bryce Harper's replacement, Andrew Benintendi being a good fit there. So I think there's no doubt that there's a lot of interest in Benintendi. Benintendi is, you know, Mountain Dew plus caffeine, you know, David DeJesus, because I'm usually using that term in reverse, calling somebody a diet
right
version.
Right.
I would give Andrew Benintendi the nod.
Jolt Cola.
Yeah. And I may not be doing David DeJesus enough service. Every time I look back at David DeJesus' numbers, I go, you know what? He was probably better than I gave him credit for. He was a good baseball player. But Benintendi and him are the same. I think if you got a hole, you look at DeJesus, you look at Benintendi, and you go, man, if we can get that guy, we got a professional lineup. That fills our lineup up. You got a tough at-bat. Every time this guy comes up, he'll draw a walk. He plays some defense. We're thrilled to get him. And then when you go to spring training and you watch the lack of times the ball goes over the wall and you look at each other and go, we got to have somebody better than this guy, don't we? Like, I think Andrew Benintendi, you know, is a player that will be not overrated. I don't think he'll ever be overrated, but he'll be coveted when a team's in need. And he'll be underrated when they feel pretty good about themselves.
Yeah.
Right? And so I think if you're the Royals, you just got to make sure that you get the right return. The question is he a guy that you can give 5 for 75 to? Is he gonna get even more? I mean, where are we at? I mean, what is the highest APY now in baseball, average per year? Is it Trout at 40-ish? Just under 40, I think, maybe. We'd need 12 for like 38 or 9, somewhere in that range. I mean, where does that put Andrew Benintendi on that scale?
You know, I think if you're a team that's trying to win, you pay a steep price to get Andrew Benintendi. Like, I think there's a little bit of Ben Zobrist. He's not as versatile as Ben Zobrist, but like Ben Zobrist would get on base for you, and he actually hits your ball. Zobrist is probably a better all-around player at his peak, but, you know, I think you love getting a hold of Benintendi if you're trying to win games right now. He's a luxury you can't afford if you got to pay the open market price for him if you're not trying to win games right now. And I think that's why it's incumbent upon the Royals. If they give him a contract, they can't be another 70-win season next
nope.
year.
Nope. And that's and I don't think they're ready to make that biggest jump yet, so I don't think that's why – I don't believe he would figure into that. By the way, Max Scherzer is making 43.
That's the three, highest, yeah. Three. Okay.
I think a best-case scenario, if you're a championship contender that trades for Benintendi, is he becomes a guy that gets it, you know, is productive for the rest of the regular season, and they get super hot and wins an LCS MVP and maybe a World Series MVP, and then you have a really tough decision to make come November because you're going to have fans clamoring for you to re-sign him, and you don't know if it would be wise to sign him based on the production he gave you for the end of the year in the playoffs.
Yeah, I just, you know, he's a good baseball player, but there's different times in teams' progression as to what his view is, different views of him depending upon where the team is. He said there, you know, number of guys mentioned more than one. So Zach Greinke's back, healthy. That would seem like an obvious target for some
yes.
folks.
And first signs were good on Friday. We'll see.
If there's something to be discouraged about, and I would caution you about being discouraged, but I could hear fans when I said, hey, is Vinny Pascantino ready to hit the ground running, or should there be some patience and maybe be prepared for some bumps?
I wrote down patience and bumps.
Patience and bumps. But I think that's to not put too much pressure on him.
Yes.
And it's going to be interesting. I'm looking forward to. I have not heard Vinny Pascantino in an interview. Have you?
I have not.
I'm going to be interested to see. Is he kind of a timid guy? Because we've heard about, well, they don't want him to be viewed as the savior of the lineup.
Mm-hmm.
There seems to be a concentrated effort to not put pressure on the kid. You know? So does he have a fragile mindset?
Where do you think he hits tomorrow?
Leadoff. Bad leadoff.
Oh, we'll hear Mike Matheny on both of those topics at the top of the hour.
And I'm looking forward to that because I do continue to marvel at the fact that you cannot be good enough to be one of the 26 best guys in this organization and then suddenly bat in the most important or second most important part of the lineup.
Yeah.
That's a big jump to go from 27th or worst to second best bat in the organization. That's a big jump, and I don't think the organization connects those dots the way I do. Maybe they're right and like, no. Once you get over this hurdle, then you do rocket past all these steps. To me, bat him 7 or 8, particularly if you believe that we need patience. Then don't throw him in there in the middle at the top of the lineup.
Throw him in the briar patch. And JJ kind of talked about why he isn't in the lineup tonight. But I fully would have expected that had this move been made earlier in the day or last night after a game last night, that he would have been in tonight's lineup. And I think he'll be in tomorrow night's lineup. And I bet he's not hitting 8.
Was Jamie Quirk 9?
He was. I have a question coming up. I have all the 9s listed in front of me. Jamie Quirk was 9. He was the 5th Royal to wear number 9.
Yeah.
The last to do it was Ryan McBroom.
Oh, could we have? We'll hope for more Quirk.
Yeah. My end of the hour question is who the first one was to wear it, which we'll hear in a moment.
Oh, really?
That's my end of the hour question.
Is it good or is it just some random hump?
No, it's good.
Then I think I can't wait
to
guess.
It's real good.
I have a good guess then.
It's really good.
Is it like Alex Gordon starting with 7? No, I know it's not Alex Gordon, but he started with 7.
Because
Angel Baroa was wearing 4.
I think this guy wore it his entire time here.
Don't answer it.
No, I'm not going to. I just want to clarify. Is it a Royal that you're talking about?
Yes.
Okay.
The first man ever to wear 9. Yeah.
Ever.
Gordie Howe.
There was a pretty good ball player early on, wore number 9. That's why I was wondering.
It was actually Hercules wore 9 in the first Roman Olympiad or Greek Olympiad.
The list of guys who've worn 9 is not strong. for the Royals.
Really?
Going backwards, I'll go back to everyone but this guy. Ryan McBroom, Lucas Duda, Drew Butera, at least, was notable, was a good backup catcher.
Hair
got
flip.
The, you know, yeah, yeah. Got the flip. Got the last put out of the World Series. Johnny Giavitella, David DeJesus was good. He was there for 8 years, wearing that number. Alexis Gomez, Greg Jeffries, Bobby Moore, Luis De Los Santos,
Greg Jeffries was good.
Yeah, 1 year. We only wore 1 year. Jamie Quirk, Dane Orge. That's probably the most notable moment of anyone wearing a nine. Joe Simpson and Clint Hurdle initially was wearing number nine.
Clint Hurdle was a tremendous disaster as a prospect.
Think about it. Two of the great moments in Royals history, the last out of a World Series win, and the most dramatic at-bat in a World Series, I think, Dane Orge. Both wearing number nine.
Yeah.
Let's hope that Vinny Pasquantino can have some postseason. If he gets a postseason at-bat in number nine, I'll be thrilled.
We will take a break here in the program. We'll come back. We'll get you the things you need to know. We will also then get to Eno Saris, get his thoughts on the moves that are being made. That's coming up in the 5 o'clock hour. It's next here in the program.
All right, Vinny Pasquantino will wear number 9 for the Royals. Who was the first player to wear number 9 for the Royals? Brought to you by Jazz, a Louisiana kitchen.